coming to you live from Charlotte, North Carolina. We're in the same room.
From Megan's living room, together as a single unit.
It's weird.
That's why the sound quality is worse, probably.
You're welcome. But that's why the energy level is so
That's true. Spicy. We're giving up having, like, individual voice tracks and, like, better microphones in order to have the two of us together in one place.
Face-to-face interaction.
Yes.
The chemistry is out of control.
Absolutely. Like, when we're not in the same place, Megan, I'm, like, half-assing it. I'm like, oh, I can't see Megan's face.
If you can't see my face, what's even the point?
Exactly.
It's a great face.
And my attitude about life in general. So it's going to be a good episode.
It is. I can already feel it.
I hope it's a good episode.
I've already had, like, a fourth more beer than normal. So we're off to a good start.
To A Bit Much. My name is Jenna.
And I'm Megan. And on A Bit Much, every 3 weeks, we read a book, watch its movie adaptation, and then talk about it while drinking some form of alcohol.
Today we're going to talk about The Hunger Games.
Bum, bum, bum. Do, do, do,
do. Yeah.
That was pretty good.
That was pretty good.
Thank you. Yeah, so this one's been a long time coming. We saved it for a very special time when we're both in the same place at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was so, I mean, for me at least, it was so instrumental in my middle school years. And high school. I mean, like, Mockingjay came out when we were in sophomores in college. Yeah. So it was, like, a good span of time.
You want to summarize it?
I do want to summarize it.
I also feel like you've done an excellent job of condensing this very complicated speculative fiction story into a summary. But I also am not that worried because I feel like most people know what The Hunger Games is about.
Yeah, unless you've been, like, living under a rock.
Yeah.
Or something. All right. When her younger sister Prim is chosen for the Hunger Games, an annual televised fight to the death involving one male and one female tribute from each of the 12 districts of Panem in repentance for the district's failed revolution 74 years earlier, Katniss Everdeen volunteers to go in her place, alongside Peeta Mellark. Before the games begin, Peeta reveals his longstanding love for Katniss, setting them up as star-crossed lovers that must enter the arena as enemies. During the games, both Peeta and Katniss make alliances, get injured in various horrible scenarios, and eventually team up as allies once the game makers reveal that two victors may be crowned if they originate from the same district. Katniss nurses Peeta back to health with the help of Haymitch, their mentor, in exchange for more airtime romance in order to sway lucrative sponsors to their aid. Following a climax involving mutant dogs and the fall of their last remaining tribute, it is announced that the rule pertaining to two victors has been revoked. Instead of killing one another, Katniss and Peeta vowed to end their lives with poison berries, forcing the game maker's hand into crowning them both victors. Unfortunately, this strategic move is seen as revolutionary by the leaders of the capital and puts both Katniss and Peeta's lives in danger.
Nice, nice.
Nice, nice.
Megan, what are we drinking?
We're drinking...
I have a bottle here.
Elysian Space Dust IPA. It's been one of my favorite beers for quite a while now.
It's good.
Thank you. So, like, I made it.
Yeah.
I did select it from the store.
Did you, like, brew this in your kitchen?
No, I wouldn't even know where to start.
With, like, hops, I guess, and yeast?
I guess there's probably water in there somewhere as well.
So, I think we both have very similar histories with this book.
Yes.
By the time I started reading them, all three of them were out, but maybe not that long after the final one had come out. I don't know.
I think I started reading it before Mockingjay came out.
Okay, anyway, I read them in, like, late middle school, early high school.
Yeah.
And liked them, generally.
Yeah.
The ending of the third one is controversial, but we're not here to talk about that.
We're not here to talk, but we don't have time for three books and three movies.
No.
And you don't have time to sit through 3 hours of us talking about
them. No, who would want to?
Listen, barely anyone wants to listen to this as it is right now.
And so then, like, watched all the movies in the theaters when they came out.
Oh, yeah. Me and my friends dressed up for the first one. We all dressed like Katniss.
Oh, that's funny. I remember that I definitely went to the midnight premiere of the first one.
Yeah, midnight premiere, dressed up, even had, like, little fake silver bows. Like, we went all out. We did the whole, like, braided our hairs to the side. Our hair to the side and everything. We went all out. But I will never forget how this book was introduced to me. Was by the coolest and richest kid in my grade in, like, seventh grade. His name is Rex. I will not give his last name. His name is Rex. And he was like, this is a really cool book. You like to read. You should read this. And I was like, okay. And then I did. And it was really good.
Interesting.
That's not that interesting, though, is it?
I think that's interesting.
It's interesting to me. Because he wasn't like...
I think the most interesting part of that story was that his name was Rex.
Oh, his name is for sure Rex. Still Rex. Was Rex. I don't think it's short for anything. Just Rex. Okay, so... I don't want to even start. There's so much.
There's a lot, and I feel like... I feel very positively towards both the book and the movie.
Interesting.
I prefer the book.
Well, yes.
Of course.
Of course, as we usually always do.
But I think in terms of adaptations, this one's pretty strong.
Yeah, it's not bad. I thought it was worse going into this rewatching of it. I expected it to be worse than it was.
Yeah, I think I agree. Which also, something that I didn't remember or know, but that I saw like in the credits, was that Suzanne Collins was one of the writers of the screenplay.
That is always a good thing.
Yeah, exactly. So,
okay.
So I feel like generally we're going to be talking about good things and about like very subtle
things. We're going to be a little nitpicky this time.
I think this story does a great job of taking this kind of wild concept and just playing it off very well. I mean, like, Suzanne Collins didn't invent the idea of, like, the Battle Royale that existed before. But the whole world that she built around it of, like, it is a consequence and a, like, sort of show of power for the ruling capital to, you know, force a couple of kids from each district to fight each other. And, like, you know, there are these very different perspectives on it, which we see of, like, with the people in the capital who very much treat it as a spectacle, as a show, and they talk about it as, like, it's an honor and a sacrifice, right? They talk about it the same way you talk about, like, Roman gladiator fights, right?
Yeah.
Of, like, they're going in to represent their district and to do their best to bring honor and whatever.
Yes.
And the richer districts also treat it that way. They, like, train for it and, you know, people volunteer for it because they want to, whereas in the poorer districts, who suffer the most at the hands of the ruling government, it's portrayed as, like, the horror that it is, you know? like no one can say that out loud because they're all being monitored by the government all the time, but people acknowledge, like, no, it's just horrifying.
Just kind of the worst. It's interesting to me the way that the movie visualizes the book. I mean, like, that's literally its entire job. But one thing that really struck me was, okay, now I have this whole theory. I have this whole theory about the timeline of the story now because of the visuals in the movie.
Right.
So when we see everyone in Capitol, in District 12, all of their clothes and everything are very, like, 40s inspired, it feels like to me.
Interesting.
And so I was like, because in the reading of The Hunger Games, to me it struck me as, like, a, you know, a dystopian America, right? That's what it's, like, set up as.
Yeah.
Is like, it's, like, post-climate change, whereas, like, a lot of things have flooded, a lot of, like, that's why everything's so buck wild. And that's how it's set up in the book. But in the movie, they don't really talk about, like, that climate change or anything. They don't even really allude to the fact that this used to be, like, America. But, so in my head now, seeing the 40s, and then also in the Capitol, there's a lot of, like, Art Deco kind of things. And, like, even the Capitol people, like, it's a lot more of a stretch now. I realize this. But, like, even their clothes are still kind of, like, 40s. 50s, but, like, heightened just to, like, a crazy, you know, it's like a modern spin, obviously, but like a lot of the like architecture and everything looks kind of like that. So I'm like, what if the instead of like a future America, this is like alternate timeline America, where instead of like the Civil War was between North and South, it's like they were against, it's not the same. I don't know. Maybe this is stupid.
I don't know if it's stupid. I think that's really interesting because I wasn't paying attention that much to... Okay, so that's the thing, right? Is that the movie obviously had to give, like, an aesthetic to this futuristic society. Yes. In which we see, like, the capital, which is very rich and very, like, you know, colorful and sort of, like, excessive and luxurious. And then we also see, like, District 12, which is one of the poorest districts. And, like, so we see, like, this contrast, right, of both. And so they had to design that. I didn't notice those, like, architectural details or anything that you did. Like, but I think that's really interesting of, like, I wonder how they... Because you're right that, like, there is this kind of... We do get more history in the books that makes it so it seems like this is probably, like, modern day or a little bit future America with an alternate timeline. But, like, I wonder how they decided to design the world then, or if they did base it off of...
Yeah, because, like, the timing works out where it's, like, 74 years, where it's, like, it would be 40s, 50s, 18-whatevers, 1860s, 18... Is that not when the Civil War is?
It is when the Civil War is, which your math ain't great, right? Because it would be... Well, no, I guess you're right, it'd be 30s, it'd be 30s,
So the timing works out, so that's just, I don't know, I saw the 40s, and my mind went off on this tangent, and now we spent a long time on it, but... That's just what it made me think. It was just interesting how the movie framed it in a different way to make me think of it, think of this alternate universe as an alternate timeline instead of, like, a possible future.
Yeah, that's interesting. I like that. I've never considered that. Speaking of, like, the visualization, I want to talk about the movie. Okay, so the movie doesn't use voiceover or narration.
No.
Whereas the book is in first person. It's from Katniss's perspective. And so, sort of as a way to give us all of the things, all of, like, the context and cultural knowledge and stuff that Katniss has that we just see in her head in the book, what the movie does is add all of this stuff that's not from Katniss's perspective. We get all these cuts to the commentators who are describing things that are happening in the arena and the, like, control room for the games, where we see, like, the sort of technicians who are in this, like, very kind of, like, futuristic, sterile kind of room with their little, like, hologram, like, touch screens.
Yeah.
You know, like, designing everything that's happening in the arena. And we also get all of these conversations with President Snow, between President Snow and the, like, person in head of, in charge of making the games.
Yeah, the head game maker. I can't remember his name.
I think, is it Seneca Crane, or is that a
it
different
is.
Character?
Okay. No, it is.
So, like, we get all of these scenes that are not from Katniss's perspective. But I thought that that was, you know, again, pros and cons, right? But I thought that was, first of all, a really good way to give us all of that context without giving us, like, a narration. Mm-hmm. And I think most of the time it was pulled off pretty well. Like, there are a couple of times where it's, like, veering a little bit into, like, over-explaining or, like, unrealistic explaining. But for the most part, very smooth and, you know, believable. Mm-hmm. And also, like, it gave us that contrast, which, again, is something that Katniss is thinking about in the book. Mm-hmm. When she's in the arena, she's thinking not just about, like, herself and her opponents in the arena and what's going on, but she's also thinking about the game makers and what choices are they making and how are they framing the story and what's being filmed and what's being heard and everything. Mm-hmm. Whereas then, like, we actually get in the movie to see that happening and also to see the distance, you know, right?
Yeah.
Not the idea, like, these people who are in making the game in this, like, control room, you know, have literally the lives of 24
children
in their hands and are so, like, you know, distant and apathetic about it. They're not caring about the children. They're caring about putting on a good show.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think it's a clever workaround for the internal thoughts of Katniss. And, like, it could have been so much worse. Like, it could have been so bad. But I feel like they did a really good job, and it helps to set up the conflict in later books.
Yes.
Of the revolution and stuff.
the movie does so much more work to hint at stuff that is going to come later in the series than the book does. Where in the book, by the end of it, we get this idea that, you know, like you said in the summary, that the fact that PETA and Katniss were able to sort of like outsmart the game makers into making both of them win, both of them survive, it, you know, that was rebellious. And other things that happened along the way were rebellious, which I want to talk more about that and how that was developed in the book. Yeah. But like, you know, so they're now in danger of retribution for this like rebellious act that they've taken. And so by the end of the book, we know that. But like in the movie, we got to see so much more. We got to see in the conversations with President Snow where he's saying these things of like, you have to give the districts hope. They have to have a winner so that they have hope, but you can't give them too much hope.
Right.
And you have, and then at the end of the movie, Seneca Crane is killed. I mean, we don't see that on screen, but we see this clever little scene, where he is presented with the poisonous berries that Katniss and PETA almost killed themselves with. And, you know, so there's that retribution. And we also see when Rue dies. So the District 11 girl is this girl named Rue, who is 12 years old, and who Katniss briefly has an alliance with. And part of that is because she reminds Katniss of her little sister. And then Rue ends up dying, being killed, and Katniss, like, puts flowers around her body before she's taken. And so when that happens, District 11, who is watching, we get a scene of them starting to revolt. I mean, starting to stand up. And, you know, we have, like, essentially, you know, like, riot police coming in and, like, shutting them down and everything. And so that is very much leading into the sort of, like, rebellion that will start in the other books. But, like, I thought that was really interesting that we got so much more lead up to what's going to happen in the future instead of, like, because I guess in the book, because, like, Katniss is kind of ignorant of that. Like, she only has her own experience.
Yeah, she's so, and, like, in the arena, they're so isolated. They don't know anything about what's happening in the outside world. She's surprised when she comes back and Haymitch is like, oh, yeah, they're, like, pissed about what you did. She was like, I was just trying to keep us both alive. Like, I was trying to make a statement. I was just trying to keep us both alive. And so, and that's interesting where it's, like, she now has to play up the romance, which, so that's another,
gotta talk about
that's one of the failings of the movie, I think.
Okay.
I think they could have gone further with setting up the fact, so, okay, so, in the book, when PETA and Katniss are finally together, Katniss has to kind of play up this romance that she doesn't really feel. I mean, she, like, she never really, like, explicitly says, like, oh, I don't love him, I don't know. She, like,
she doesn't have romantic feelings for him, but when they have the little interviews, and PETA reveals in the interview that he has a crush on Katniss and that he's always loved her. Katniss interprets that as solely a strategic move for the games in order to get people to like them, get involved in their tragic love story, in order to get them sponsors and fans who are watching. And it may truly be a strategic move, but Katniss also assumes it's a lie.
Yes.
But it's not. PETA truly does love Katniss. But Katniss assumes that it's all just a strategy. And so throughout the whole story, Katniss is playing into the romance, but only because she thinks it's a strategy to keep them alive.
Do you think that that is true, that she doesn't think that he loves her at all?
I think the further we get into the story, there are more moments of doubt. I mean, there's moments where she literally thinks, like, did he mean that as though he really loves me, or does he mean that because we're trying to stay alive?
Yeah, like that moment where he was like, oh, he remembers a lot.
Yeah.
Something I do.
Right, when he, like, tells a little story about, like, I remember the first day of school, and he, like, sang a song, and, like, I, you know, could never take my eyes off you after that. And after that whole thing, she's like, if he doesn't like me, why does he remember all that stuff?
Like, it's oddly specific.
So, yeah, I think she starts, but I, okay, but I think that she believes that even if he truly does have feelings for her, he's also leveraging them as a strategy to stay alive.
Okay. I'll give you that.
Like, I feel like even if she, like, I feel like from Katniss's perspective, she's like, feelings aside, we have to play this up.
Yeah.
To get there. And I think she thinks Peeta's on the same page in terms of that. Like, I think she thinks that Peeta knows that they're doing this as a strategy. And that, like...
I don't know. But then, because at the end, she has to be like... It's, you know, they're out by the train, yeah, and they're finally out of the arena, and, like...
So they're not being monitored all the time anymore.
Right. So it's like they had to keep playing up the romance to, like, convince, like, pretty much Haymitch is like, in order to stay alive, you need to convince the Capitol that, like, the only reason that you did this Barry thing was because you were so in love with Peeta that you could not imagine living without him. Like, it was love drove you crazy. It had nothing to do with, like, putting one over on the Capitol. That's your job, is to convince you that is why you did these things. And so, like, she plays it up, you know, when they're in the Capitol, but then they're going home, and, like Jenna said, they're not monitored anymore, and I can't remember their exact conversation.
Okay, so Haymitch comes to them in that scene.
Yes.
And he says, hey, look, guys, you gotta keep it up once we get back to the district until the cameras go away. And then Peeta is kind of like, what was he talking about? And then Katniss says, well, we have to keep, like, the relationship up, you know, so that narrative kind of stays. Mm-hmm. And then Peeta's like, so this was all a strategy you and Haymitch worked out. And then Katniss says, like, I don't know. I'm confused.
Yeah.
Like, I was trying to stay alive.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and so she acknowledges that it's like, it is always clear from at least once, I don't know, it's complicated.
It is complicated.
But by the time that they are, like, united as allies in the arena, she does care for Peeta.
Oh, yeah.
She likes him. She's his friend. She wants him to survive. She wants them to work together.
Yes.
But she doesn't necessarily love him, or she can't untangle whether she does have feelings from him from what she's doing in order to stay alive.
And, like, granted, now is not the time.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. So then at the end of that book, she says, you know, I don't know what was real and what was just pretend.
Yeah.
And then he kind of distances himself and says, like, well, I guess we'll just keep it up for the cameras. And that's where the first book ends.
Yeah. He's like, one more time for the cameras.
Right. Whatever.
So I think that's in the book. In the movie, I think it's less explicit because we don't get her in her monologue. So it's like, there are some clues, right, where there's Haymitch's note with the broth. So, like, sponsors can send gifts to tributes in order to help them survive. And in the movie, it's made much more explicit in Haymitch's notes to Katniss that accompany these gifts that, like, he wants her to play up the romance so that he can get more money for them, basically. Right. And so that's a clue where it's like Haymitch is like, you call that a kiss?
Yeah.
For his note, when she, like, kisses him on the cheek, he gives them broth. And so, like, he makes it very obvious, like, you need more romance so that we can get more money and we can help you. So that's a clue. And then, like, a little bit when in the Barry's moment where she's like, you know, trust me, this is going to work. Like, basically, like, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. We're not actually going to die. This is going to work. And then, like, they're counting down and she's kind of looking around like, y'all really just gonna let us die? But those are, like, the only things I can think of. Like, I think the line is even more blurred in the movie.
Yeah, yeah. So they
to his still, detriment.
Exactly. So we still see sort of a conversation between them at the end when they're on the train going home.
Yeah.
Where Peeta says, in the movie, Peeta says, what are we going to do when we go home?
Mm-hmm.
And Katniss says, I don't know. Try to forget, I guess. And Peeta says, I don't want to forget. And so, of course, they're talking about different things. Katniss is saying, forget about this obviously deeply traumatic experience in which they were fearing for their lives and each individually killed a number of people.
Yes.
But then Peeta is saying, I don't want to forget the relationship that we've built. But so far as we know, at the end of the movie, Peeta doesn't know that Katniss doesn't think that she loves him.
Yeah, which is made very explicit in the book.
Right. So, and that's, I mean, like, I don't know how that gets picked up in the next movie. You know, like, maybe that's established there.
I can't remember.
Because it is really, like, the movies more so than the books sort of function as a unit. I mean, at least in this movie, right? Like we said, like, there are all, like, at the end of this movie, there are way more, like, loose strings than there are in the book, you know? Yeah. Because they've begun all of this work that will be picked up in the next movie. So it's like, maybe this is just a particular plot line where they, like, stretched it out and they're going to pick it up next movie. I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah, I can't remember. But, I mean, the whole movie is more, I would not say as much as I remembered it being, but it's more focused on the romance, the, like, setting up the love triangle between Gale and Katniss and Peeta, where Gale is, like, watching them on the screen and, like, obviously conflicted about what is happening. And so it's just, I don't know. I mean, like I said, I love love. I love reading about love. I love watching people fall in love. But it's like, that's not the point of these books. Like, the love triangle or whatever is, like, very much a minor plot point.
Yes. It's still important, but it's not the main theme of the book, you know?
No. Which I think it's heightened a lot in the movies. Okay.
Well, then let's move on and talk about something else.
Okay.
I'm just saying, I feel like we've exhausted. like, it's interesting, but I feel like we've covered it.
Cool. Check. Done.
We talk about Rue, though.
Okay.
So they start out the movie, the first scene we get with Katniss, she sings a song to her sister.
Yes.
Which doesn't happen in the book.
No.
But we get her with her sister singing the song. And then when Rue is dying, which also, we didn't get a lot of Rue in the movie.
We didn't, but, like, honestly, we didn't get a lot of her in the book either.
No, but, like, I guess mostly I'm thinking about the period when they are in an alliance with each other.
Okay.
We basically got, like, one very short scene where they talk, and they mostly talk about what's happening in the arena.
That's fair, yeah.
Whereas in the book, we got Rue told Katniss about her life in District 11.
Yeah.
And that is, first of all, revolutionary in its own way, because part of the way that the Capitol keeps its control over the districts is by the control of information. And essentially by very tightly controlling how much the districts know about each other.
Yeah.
So when Rue and Katniss get together and start talking about and comparing their lives, which both of them come from very poor districts, but they're still different. And
they
come to this, you know, understanding about each other and a larger understanding about the nation that they live in.
Mm-hmm.
And that also, I mean, it also tells you more about Rue. You know? Like,
yeah.
It makes you like her more just because you know more about her. So then it's more crushing when she dies.
Yes. No, the impact is a lot more impactful. The impact is impactful with the impactness of the book. But I did think, I liked how in the movie they used the song to connect Rue and Prim.
Exactly.
Where they couldn't really do that, you know, because that was through, obviously, Katniss's thoughts and feelings.
Right.
So I think that was a clever way to connect them.
Yeah, so then when Rue dies, she sings that same song that she sang to Prim at the beginning, which, yes, I agree, was a good connection. I mean, we've kind of already talked about this, but I thought it was interesting. Okay, actually, I do want to talk about this, about the rule changes.
Okay.
So in the book, there's an announcement once there's, I don't know, like 8 people left, that for this Hunger Games, if 2 tributes from the same district are the last remaining, they both win.
Yes.
That's obviously directed Peeta and Katniss, right?
Yeah, the only other team that's still, I mean, the only other tributes that are from the same district left are Clove and Kato from District 2.
Right. So they just make that change. And again, we only get Katniss's perspective, so we don't know why that change was made. But just there was.
Mm-hmm.
So then she and Peeta get to team up, and then they survive till the end, and then once they're the last 2 living, we get another announcement. Actually, that's not allowed, so you guys have to fight to the death now, and whoever survives is the winner.
Yeah.
So, just talking about in the book, I am, like, a little bit confused by that. I can see the first... The first rule change obviously was directed to bring them together because that's an interesting, like, for the viewers, right? For the TV show aspect. Makes sense. And then, of course, you can assume that they never actually intended for both of them to survive. Yeah. Because slippery slope, once you let two tributes survive, soon enough, you're not doing
that's the Hunger gateway, Games. Yeah, it's a gateway drug to, you know, peace and prosperity.
Exactly. So, like, obviously, that was never intended. So then once it ends up that, like, oh, damn, the star-crossed lovers do end up the last two, they're just like, rule change, actually have to kill each other.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I'm just thinking, like, from the perspective of a viewer,
mm-hmm.
if first they wanted to construct this around, like, star-crossed lovers, tragic because they can't both survive.
Yes.
They, you know, we change the rules so they can be together and mm-hmm. the audience gets to see them together. But then, like, I feel like that fight, you know, the game makers assumed final scene of, well, now they have to fight to the death. Like, I feel like if they were willing to fight to the death, that removes all the sympathy for them, right? Like, let's say hypothetically, they don't do the Barry thing. They fight each other. Katniss wins. Okay? Mm-hmm. She's killed PETA now. And she comes out as the victor. Who's going to celebrate her if they were all in love with the love story? What are they going to, you know, like, when she comes out, are they going to be like, woohoo, you survived. And yeah, that was so tragic. You had to kill your boyfriend. But, like, good for you. Or are they going to, like, is that itself going to start sowing doubt?
That's a very good point. And I have thought about this before. I have, like, two theories.
Okay.
First theory is, you know, the people in the Capitol only care about the tributes up to a certain point, right? Like, they're willing to watch them all die. So, like, I don't know if they would value their love more than they would value the plot twist of, like, oh, no, they have to kill each other, which is still, you know, horribly, a fascinating thing to watch, a thing to unravel. And, like, even if they do kill the other person, like, obviously they're going to be very, 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 very sad about it. Like, it's still tragic. It's still, like, Romeo and Juliet tragic, except one of them is alive and killed the other one. Like, it's still compelling. It's compelling, but I can see where your point where it's, like, less sympathetic. But that could also have been the point where, like, the Capitol maybe loved their love story too much. Where it's like, don't forget that these are the lower classes. These are the people we're not actually supposed to care about that much. Like, watch yourselves, you know? Like,
I think that's actually a really good theory.
Yeah, where it's like, you know, don't, you know, venerate them too much. Because then, yeah, that's a slippery slope of, like, if you make them people, then they won't want to watch them die.
Yeah.
You know?
No, I think that's a really good theory. So then the movie was, like, almost even weirder.
Yeah.
Where the movie had Haymitch telling Seneca, the lead game maker, you should let them be together.
Then, yeah, so, like, what's the end game?
Right. I mean, like, I understand that Haymitch is... I guess I could see, again, because all of this turns out very differently if just the two of them survive to the end or if one or both of them dies before the end.
Yes.
Right? Because, like, again, if they had done the, like, oh, we changed the rules, you can be together, and they'd gotten together, and then, like, run into another, you know, tribute, or, like, things had gone wrong at the feast where she has to go get medicine for him, and, like, she died, whatever, then we just get tragic love story, but it ends, they're dead.
Yeah.
Versus the two of them actually make it to the end, and then we have to deal with both of them are still alive.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's also true in the movie, and Haymitch might just be, like, trying to give them both as long as he can, you know?
True.
Like, right, because at that point, Katniss is doing okay. PETA is, like, dying of a wound.
Yeah.
So he knows, like, if the two of them work together, PETA certainly has a better chance.
Mm-hmm.
Katniss may or may not have a better chance.
Yeah.
So, like, I can see that being, like, a temporary thing, because it's like, okay, they work together, it can help them out. Maybe that's not a permanent solution, because one of them dies, mm-hmm. but then that doesn't
But literally
matter.
Anything could happen. So.
Exactly. So I can see that.
I have a more cold-blooded theory of, because Haymitch, both Haymitch and Katniss can be very cold-blooded.
They can be very practical.
Practical, cold-blooded, same thing.
They can be very practical, and they have their, well, Katniss more so has, like, priorities, right? Of, like, she'll do anything for her family. I don't know that Haymitch has the same, like, he'll do anything for a thing.
No.
When we meet him, he doesn't really care about anything.
No. I mean, but he comes to care about Katniss and PETA.
Yeah.
I'm saying, you know, pragmatically, he sees PETA. PETA's on, like, on death's door, basically. Yeah. But, like, the way they set it up in the movie is that this move is to help Katniss. Because they're pissed that she did this Rue thing. They're royally pissed. They want to kill her. And Haymitch goes, no. Don't kill her. You'll make her a martyr, first of all, is what he says. You'll make her a martyr. Second of all, why would you do that when you have a perfect, like, plot line of their love connection? Like, just let them be together. So I'm thinking maybe, you know, in pragmatic world, maybe he thinks PETA will just die. This is keeping Katniss alive. Like, if she still has a chance, PETA's kind of...
No, I think that's dying. I think that's also a good theory.
Okay.
Yeah. So, like, speaking of Katniss and her practicality.
Yes.
Like, I think it's... Okay, so they have this conversation before the games, the night before the games, where PETA talks about how no matter what happens in the arena, he wants to still remain himself. Like, he doesn't want to just become a pawn of the Capitol. Yes. He wants to somehow maintain his own individuality.
Mm-hmm.
And Katniss... I don't remember if she disagrees kind of with that line of thinking in both the book and the movie.
Yeah.
In the movie, she specifically has this line where she says, like, I can't afford to think like that.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that goes back to, like, she will do anything for her sister.
Yeah.
So, like, in this case, that means doing whatever she has to to win the game so that she can go home and support her sister.
Yeah.
But, like, so she views it as, like, oh, he has this, like, noble... idea of, like, oh, if I'm gonna die, I'm gonna do it in some honorable way and not just as, like, a pawn of the Capitol.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing about that, that maybe she doesn't realize at the time, is that PETA never thinks that he will win these games.
Oh, no.
He is always 100% sure. Partially just because he knows that Katniss has a much better chance. So, like, even if no one else from any other district does, Katniss has that chance.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, it's just one of those interesting dynamics where she says, I can't afford to think like that, right? But it's like, that's not what it's about.
Yeah.
Like, you have something to fight for, and you have a chance of winning it.
Yeah.
Whereas PETA is going into this thinking, like, I'm going to die no matter what.
Yeah.
I don't have the skill to survive this. So, like, the only thing I can focus on is how I die.
I've never thought about that. That's very interesting.
Yeah. I really like PETA Mellark.
I love PETA so much.
Like, I like them both. They're both very interesting, complicated characters.
Yes.
But, like, poor PETA.
Poor PETA. God, I just want to give him a hug, wrap him in a blanket.
And you know what I missed in the movie? Is just all of his bread knowledge.
Oh, he has so much bread knowledge.
Because he's a baker. He's the son of bakers.
Yes.
And which means that, like, in District 12 means he had, like, a pretty cushy life, comparatively. He wasn't the child of coal miners, he was the child of bakers.
Yes.
But, like, he got to live a pretty nice life.
He was, like,
but, yeah, and just, like, all of his little bread facts that he gives throughout the books are so fun. Like, I just love that, like, what he knows to do really well is bread and baked goods.
Oh.
And that does help him in the arena.
It does.
When he does his little camouflage, because he's like, I iced the cakes.
Yeah.
It's so cute, and I love
him. He's like, basically, if a loaf of bread was a person, it would be Peter Mark. Just warm and cozy. Delicious.
Full of carbs.
It's good hearty carbs.
Yes.
He's a thick boy.
Yes.
Oh, gosh. So, the intro... So, of course, we can't have a book adaptation without an intro that gives us some sort of exposition. And so it's, like, it's explaining what the Hunger Games are, pretty much. But, like, I don't think we need that. I think we get all of that information as we go. Like, that seemed unnecessary to me. They could have just, like, did, like, a dash more. Like, we get that weird video, too, that also explains what it is. It just feels unnecessary.
Yeah, I think you're right that, like, probably most of what is said in those, like, credits at the beginning, most of what we get from that is explained other places in the story. I can see if they wanted to kind of prime you so that you know going
what's
in.
What's at stake?
What's at stake, A. Because also, like, right after that we go to... I think the first scene after that is, like, Caesar Flickerman, the sort of commentator, interviewing Seneca Crane, the game maker.
Yeah.
So that kind of gives you the idea of, like, the Capitol's conception of the games.
Mm-hmm.
And then we switch immediately to Prim has had a nightmare that Which, she was...
That transition is choice.
Yeah, no, it's good. Like, the contrast. Again, that she's had a nightmare that she ends up in the Hunger Games, and Katniss is comforting her.
Yeah.
So, like, I do think for those scenes to start out the movie, we do need that context beforehand, right? We need to know what the Hunger Games are, and that people die in it, and that it is a way of the government controlling its citizens. Yeah. And, like, you're right.
Then we could have cut out that stupid video. I don't like that video.
Yeah, maybe.
But that transition, I just want to talk about that transition a little bit more, because it's just a great film. Is, so, Caesar Fuckman, interviewing the guy, he's like, I think the quote was something like, as a game maker, like, what is your signature? And then they cut immediately to Prim's child scream. And it's, like, so good. It's such a great way to open that movie with that juxtaposition of just, like, in the Capitol, outside the Capitol. Yeah. Oh, it was so good.
No, it was very,
very impressed.
I have a couple of, like, minor flaws in the movie.
Let me hear it. Let's, so that, let's go to nitpick town.
Because one of them you pointed out. Ooh. There are a couple of things. There are just a couple of details that don't, if you came into this not having read the book,
right,
don't make contextual sense.
Yes.
Which one of them, well, you can make an argument for this. Okay. But one of them is when Rue and Katniss team up.
Mm-hmm.
They make a plan to destroy all the food and supplies that the career team, the sort of, like, expert, pre-trained, rich alliance, has, which they all have, like, piled up.
Yeah.
And so the plan is, like, Rue is going to be a distraction to draw the careers away from their home base, and Katniss is going to go and somehow destroy the supplies.
Mm-hmm.
So once Katniss gets there, through her observations, she realizes that they have set landmines around their food supply.
Mm-hmm.
And so Katniss manages to set off the landmines, blowing up all the food. But Rue doesn't know that there were landmines, because Katniss only found that out when she got there.
You're right!
But then when Katniss and Rue reunite, which is when Rue is being attacked and ends up having a mortal wound. But then before Rue dies, she asks, did you blow up the food? And it's like, how'd you know she was blowing it up? And I guess you could argue maybe she heard an explosion. But, like, how would you know that that was the food?
Yeah. That's a good catch.
So that was one thing. The other one was Foxface.
Foxface. They never call, they only call her Foxface once. Peter says it once. And it's like, who?
Exactly, right. And that one, I, like, don't understand. Because, yeah, so there's this character, she's the girl from District 5, I think?
Yeah.
Who is, she's very clever, and in her internal monologue, Katniss calls her Foxface, okay?
She's, like, has red hair and clever.
Yeah. And so, like, throughout the novel, we know when she says Foxface who she's referring to. But in the movie, we don't have that internal monologue, so we never hear her referred to as Foxface. We just know her as, like, the redheaded clever girl.
Yeah.
And then at one point, PETA, who, why would she know her name was, anyway, PETA says something about Foxface, and it's like, who?
Yeah.
Like, and why would they, like, that's just, like, a tiny detail that they
missed. Okay. It's just, he, like, could have
easily, he could have easily said, like, oh, what happened to the girl from District 5? That would have been equally easy.
Yeah.
And, we would have known from context, because we've seen her with a little five on her jacket, and she picked up the backpack with five on it. Like, mm-hmm. We would have known who that was.
Yeah.
But that was just a little, like,
yeah.
I mean, proofreading that's either, like, mistake.
Yeah, proofreading in the screenplay, yeah. Or, like, it could just be, like, they shot something earlier that Katniss called her Foxface, and yeah. They cut it out. Like,
maybe.
Yeah, it's just very tiny, but, yeah. So, one thing that I think the book does really well, that the movie kind of lacks, and it's, like, it's just for time, I think, is the idea, so the movie does a good job of capturing, like, the Capitol keeps the districts down through the Hunger Games because it is just so goddamn depressing. Like, it's just, it's, yeah, it's just, like, the Capitol is oppressive in the movie. Like, you totally get that. But what is lacking in the movie that is very prevalent in the books is, like, the Hunger Games is not just a way to depress all of the districts, it's a way to pit them against each other.
Yes.
Which I think is lacking in the movie a little. Like it's in there a little bit, but it's not the main focus, which I think is such a pivotal idea
in the book. It's so important. It's, what the Hunger Games does, yes, it's a, they're losing the kids. But it's also, yes, it's pitting the districts against each other. And even within the districts, you have a girl and a boy from each district. It's pitting them again together. And so that's why it was so revolutionary that even from the start, even before the love declaration, the District 12 team, including the stylists and Haymitch and Effie, they're like capital representative, not so much Effie, but they were telling Peeta and Katniss to act as a unit. They held hands when they were in the parade, and they, you know, like when during training, they would work together, right? And so like even that is a small rebellion that like they're not opponents, they're together.
Yes.
And then that also, you know, when Rue and Katniss were aligned in the book and they talk to each other about their lives, about what it was like in their different districts. And, you know, Katniss realizes, like, the various forms of oppression that Rue experiences in District 11. And, like, that's where, like, that's where we start to get the seeds of this revolution that is going to occur in the later series.
Another thing that I, like, never noticed until this reread that I had currently, like, I've probably reread it. This is probably the third time that I've read The Hunger Games.
Yeah, I think so, too.
And the thing that I noticed is, like, just how many adults were, like... So, okay, so the idea of revolution and everything, like, that there was already a kind of group of adults who had decided that Katniss and Peeta were going to be at least semi-revolutionary flavored, if you will.
Yeah.
And they, like... They didn't decide that at all.
Yeah.
That's, they're like tools for these adults who like do care about them. Haymitch cares about them. Cinna cares about them. Like, but they are still being used in that way. Like, very deliberately. And I just had never noticed that before, where it's like, it's this, and it's hard to tell how much it feeds into like the fact that it, you know, it grows so much. Like, I don't think they could ever. Like, the adults could ever foresee that happening. But, like, there was definitely, like, a very, like, a silent movement behind Peeta and Katniss to undermine the Capitol and, like, just the people involved. Like, it was just, it's subtle, but it's cool.
Yeah, and that's the thing is that, like, Katniss, like, obviously, yes, there are these outside influences who are sort of putting that onto them. But then also, like, throughout this book and movie, like, Katniss takes all of these actions that are, in their own ways, revolutionary. But she is almost never thinking of them in that sense. It's always a personal thing to her, right? And, you know, so, yeah, in the later books and movies, it's, like, Katniss specifically, more so than Peeta. Because, again, like, Katniss is more concerned about, like, sticking it to the Capitol.
Yeah.
She never intends to start a revolution.
No.
But she is, like, she has the idea, whereas Peeta really is mostly ruled by his emotions, you know? But, like, Katniss ends up being this figure of the revolution, which she doesn't want to be. She never wants to be.
No.
But it's just that her actions were the ones that, you know, sparked a more widespread rebellion.
Yeah.
It's very interesting.
So good.
Actually, speaking of kind of like that and like sticking it to the Capitol, I thought it was an interesting change that the movie made at the end. So at the end, it's Peeta and Katniss and then Kato, the District 2 boy. And Kato is like this ruthless killer. I mean, like, very capable, very powerful, probably has killed the most people out of all of the tributes.
Yeah, I would say.
And at the end, they have this standoff where they're on top of the cornucopia structure. And Kato grabs Peeta and, you know, says to Katniss, like, go ahead, shoot us. If you kill me, you're killing him too. And then she manages to just shoot his hand, so he lets go. Peeta kicks him off. The monsters get him. Game over. But in the movie, Kato has a couple of lines in that scene where he is, like, questioning a lot of stuff.
He's, like, been through some shit.
And again, like, because he talks about, because he says something about, like, that's what they want, don't they? Right? He's gotten to the point in where, like, even though he's grown up in District 2 where the games are, again, like, revered, they're treated as an honor, whatever, you're training for them, like, through this experience, movie Kato has come to realize that he is just a pawn in a much bigger game.
Yes.
And he has been traumatized by this, where he goes, you know, like, that's what they want, don't they? They want me to be a killing machine. Like, that's all I'm good for, you know? Like, he goes into this, like... Like, they made Kato a much more interesting character just in that one scene in the movie.
And he's like, one of my favorite lines that he says is like, it doesn't matter, like, I'm dead already. Like,
yeah.
I was dead before this even started. Like, I didn't know that till now. Yeah. But it doesn't matter. Like, I've always just been meat, basically. Yeah. Oh, man. Like, it's good. It's good. I wish they would have, like, pulled back just a little bit. Like, just left one line out of that speech.
You think it was, like, a little bit over the top?
A little bit too much over the top. Like, how did he have time for so much introspection in all of this chaos? Yeah. I don't really understand that part. But, no, I do like that he did have that subversive part at the end. Right. But I do wish they had used a little bit of restraint.
Yeah. So the Hunger Games happen every year.
Yes.
And the Capitol watches them every year and loves them.
Yes.
Do you think that's too often? Do you think they lose interest?
No.
Okay.
Because what I will say is because, like, how many seasons do we have of, like, Survivor?
Okay, so that's the counter argument that I myself came up with against myself. Like, so, like, people still love
this shit. And it's, like, it's so different every year. Like, they make it different landscapes, different, you know, they have the technology to, like, what, just poof animals out of the ground, apparently. And so,
that's
like,
in the movie.
I know. Just poking fun.
Yeah.
But they have the technology to make it different every year. And so I don't think it's too often.
Okay.
It's almost not often enough. Really? I think
once a year, I think that's a good amount for the districts. Like, I think having to give up two children once a year is good. What I was thinking about is I was comparing it in my mind to the Olympics. And I was like, we have the Olympics, like, every 2 years, except, like, actually, depending on the sport, every 4 years.
Yeah.
Because I feel like if the Olympics happened every year, I wouldn't be as interested. Like, it's the fact that it's a little bit special. But you do have a great point that, yeah, like, we have reality television, which is essentially what this is.
Mm-hmm.
And that does begin a new season every year. So, yeah. And people still watch it. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's
And there are argument. Tweaks. Like, yeah. In different Survivor and, like, Big Brother and, like, everything's, like, there are minor tweaks that, like, keep it fresh and keep people interested. But, like, in Hunger Games world, like, those tweaks can be giant, like, they can be huge.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting, though, that, like, in the book, they talk about some of the more boring games, you know?
Yeah.
Like, they'll talk about ones where it's, like, they'll talk about ones like, well, they did, like, a cold environment and just everyone froze to death. That was so boring. Anyway.
That was interesting. Which, okay, so one thought that I had, maybe also cut out, it's not interesting, is would, like, how, I don't know if it would go for 74 years without revolution because people feel so strongly about their children. Like, that's the one thing I can think of that people will do literally anything for, like, crazy things for are their children. And maybe it's because they're teenagers and maybe, I don't know, but, like, I just think, I find it difficult to envision a world where, like, that goes on for so long and parents don't do shit about it.
No, that's a good point. I mean, you're right. But, like, 74 years is a long time for this thing to have gone on. Although also, like, okay, because you're right. Like, people do anything for their children.
Yeah.
Like, that's mostly true. but, like, when you think about, like, the case of Katniss, like, that's kind of all what her story is about, right? That, like, Prim gets chosen randomly.
Yeah.
And so then Katniss steps up to say, I can't let Prim die. I'll go in her place.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you can see maybe from her mother's perspective of, like, yes, obviously her mother doesn't want to lose Katniss, but doing anything rebellious then also puts her other daughter in danger, you know?
I guess, yeah.
But also, like, for that to have happened for everyone for 74 years is a lot.
Yeah, like, there were no single children all the time, or the parents just, like, you know, I don't know. Because, you know, horrifying things do happen in real life, and people let them happen, and that's a reality, but it's just hard to imagine but I guess, you know, argument for that is after 74 years, that's how many generations? Like, people have grown up and lived with just this reality. Yeah. It's not something to fight against. It's just the way things are.
Right. That was, like, something that I read in the Wikipedia page.
Yes.
About how in the movie, the inclusion of President Snow, kind of offered this contrast of, like, President Snow obviously is an older man who looks like he's in his, you know, 60s, 70s. I don't know how old Donald Sutherland actually was when he played it. But, and, you know, obviously he's doing this because he is the president, but also, like, is having these conversations with Seneca Crane, who's, you know, obviously a younger man. Like, he looks to me like, I don't know, 40s, you know, maybe younger.
Right.
But, like, he's a movie star, so I assume he actually is older than he looks.
That's fair. Okay.
Oh, yeah, like, 30s, 40s.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you see, like, the, you know, crowds in the Capitol watching it, right? Of there's this contrast of, like, President Snow kind of representing the older generation who was maybe still alive when the revolution happened and the Hunger Games was instated, who understands its beginnings explicitly as a political tool, and that's what it is, versus younger people who have been just brought up on it as a fact, as you said, and in the Capitol specifically, as entertainment.
Yeah. Things you just don't think of, you don't question.
Right.
Interesting.
PETA teams up with the Careers at the beginning.
I have always wanted to know how that happened. Yeah.
I have questions about that.
So I have, like, so many questions.
Because
how did they not just kill him on the spot?
Exactly. What? Okay, so PETA, in his, like, training, was scored an 8.
Yes.
A decent score.
Yeah, not great, not terrible.
Probably, like, just below or approximately the same as the other Careers, right? I mean, they were probably getting, like, 9s, 10s.
Yeah, yeah, 8,
9, 10s. Yeah.
Yes, yeah, that's true.
So, like, they would have known that he had some skill.
Okay. Yeah, some value.
And the other thing that I can think that they would be willing to let him in their alliance, that he would offer them, is access to Katniss, right? That's something that's kind of referred to, is the idea that PETA will lead us to Katniss. And Katniss got an 11. So she's obviously a threat. She got the highest score out of any of the tributes.
Yes.
So, like, PETA will lead us to her.
Right, but did he bill that as, I will, like, that was all a trick.
That's my question.
I really don't care about her. I will let, like, that was a trick to, like, you know, get close to her, and now I can help you kill her. Or was it, like, he kept up that facade, and they thought, like, that he would try to help her, and then they would kill both of them?
Right. I don't know. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, so I have questions about that. I have questions about, like, because I can see from the Careers' perspective why they might let him live and let him ally with them.
And, like, even bait for Katniss.
Exactly. Yes, 100%. Okay. But I don't see, I'm so curious what PETA's thought process in that was. Like, was he just like, I'm not good enough to win, so I'm just going to hang out with the, like, that seems almost counterintuitive to his, like, noble ideas, right? Like, it seems like he was teaming up explicitly with the people who are always, of course, pawns in the Capitals game.
I think the point, I think there's some, it's, like, very, it's alluded to, it is never said explicitly, but that PETA's motivation for joining the Careers was to keep them away from Katniss.
Yeah. Well, and so that's part of, right, is that moment when they're standing on the little pedestals, they have 60 seconds before they can go in the arena.
Yeah.
And Katniss is eyeing stuff in the cornucopia,
mm-hmm.
and she looks over at PETA, and PETA shakes his head, like, no, get the fuck out of here.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, I can see where then, like, he's encouraging her, obviously, to run because he doesn't want her to get caught up in the bloodshed.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's sticking around and allying with them to try and protect her by misleading them.
But also, like, how?
Yeah, it's still, like, I, like, still telling have him, questions,
like,
about
no
that.
Matter what, like, she doesn't ever climb trees. Like,
or, yeah, like, anytime they're, like, get a glimpse of her, like, on her trail, he's like, oh, wait, guys, I see Thresh over there.
I mean, or it could just be, like, you know, a backstabbing moment where, like, maybe they corner her and then he, like, takes Kato out or something.
I guess. I just thought it was so weird that that's never explained.
Never.
Katniss never asks him why he did that. Nope. In, like, the post-games when they have their little, like, watching party with Caesar Flickerman. Caesar Flickerman never asked him why he did that. And also, like, because in that, you know, like, after the games, they watch sort of like it's like 3 hours long, like, cut of what happened in the games, okay?
Yeah.
So we saw, like, obviously in the fiction, they saw Peeta team up with them.
Oh my goodness,
but we, as the reader, never saw how that happened.
No.
And never got Peeta's perspective on why it happened.
Never. I'm so mad about it.
Yeah, so I still don't get that.
But yeah. How did he survive the bloodbath in order to even be like, hey guys,
yeah,
sup? I don't know.
Yeah. In the movie, I felt like her idea to take the night walk came too fast.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's very true.
Because, like, they have this whole argument and conversation about it in the book that then leads to her having this realization of, like, no, you're right. Like, if both of us can't win, then fuck it. We're dying together. Whereas in the movie, it was, like, literally, like, immediately as soon as they made that announcement and Peeta's like, go ahead, kill me. And she's like, no, we'll both commit suicide right now with these berries.
Yeah. Okay. But one thing that I hate that they... Oh, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I hate that they took out of the movie... was the moment where they're like, okay, now only one victor. And Peeta does something. He, like, picks up a knife, like, to throw it away. And Katniss immediately trains her bow on him.
Yeah.
And is, like, ready to shoot him. And he, like, throws it away. He's like, no, like, he's like, yeah, shoot me. He's, like, immediately like, yes, shoot me. But, like, she was so ready to kill him. Like,
well, no, I mean,
that's such
just
a good moment.
Yeah, right. No, it's just such, like, an instinct thing, right?
Yes.
Like, he reaches for his knife. And, of course... he's going to throw it away because he's trying to make a statement of, like, I won't hurt you.
Yes.
But he goes for his knife and her just instinct is to train her bow on him.
Yes. And that's such a good character
moment. And then, of course, she feels immediately guilty about that. Like, terrible. Because then she sees, he wasn't going to hurt me. Of course, he would never hurt me. But also, like, but would he? Because she's trained to not trust anyone.
Yes. It's such a good character moment. Oh, God. I'm so mad they took it out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also, freaking Peeta's leg. They messed that up the whole time.
Yeah, I mean, both of them were just not as
swim.
Injured as they should have been.
Oh, yeah.
At the end.
And I was convinced, like, I have such a vivid picture in my head of, like, her, like, them going up into the hovercraft and her, like, banging on the glass between them. But, like, I have such a vivid memory of that. I was convinced it was in the movie. It's not. That's just such a great moment that I have, like, solidified it in my head.
I also do, yeah. Yeah. Just another subtle difference in the movie that I thought was different. Haymitch is a little bit different in the movie. His personality is pretty much the same, but the events are a little bit different.
Yeah.
Like, we don't see him... We see that he's, like, drunk all the time in both of them.
Yeah.
That's, like, more apparent in the book, mm-hmm. but, like, it comes across fine in the movie.
Yeah.
But what I thought was interesting, this very subtle change, is, like, at the beginning he's drunk and obviously, like, not taking it seriously. Again, just because it's, like, traumatic for him to have to help out two children who are going to die every year, right? And, so in the beginning, when they're, like, trying to get him to, like, help them out because he's their mentor, probably Peeta in both book and movie, asks, like, you know, okay, well, like, what's your advice? And in the movie... he says, like, embrace the idea that you are going to die soon. And in the book, he says, here's some advice, stay alive.
Oh,
and those
so
are
different.
Like, right? It's like, it's the same idea, but it's like, the wording is so different. Like, the ideas behind the words make such a, even though it's like, yeah, stay alive or like, whatever. Like, because he says it in this kind of cheeky way in the book, right? Stay alive. But it's still, like, it's different. I thought that was an interesting change that they made.
I think it's a good one. I think it's a good choice for the movie in order to cut to the chase quicker about Haymitch that he is an asshole because he has to watch kids die every year.
Right.
Like, this is why he is the way he is. Like, because the rest of that quote is, like, embrace the inevitability that you are going to die and that there's nothing I can do to help you.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's, like, I think it just cuts to the quick of, like, this is... Haymitch, and this is exactly why Haymitch is the way Haymitch is.
Yeah.
It's, like, it's very well done, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
It's just so good.
It's really good.
Right? Like, I was going into this, rereading it, like, oh, like, it's probably not as good. Like, you know, I read it when I was young, and I was, like, that was, like, probably my first YA obsession, because I don't even count Harry Potter as YA, because that's just a whole other level. But, like, that was my first, like, YA, like, obsession, and I was, like, okay, then it's probably not as good as I remember. Like, even when I reread it before, like, Mockingjay, the movie came out, like, probably not that great. Holds up so
it's
well.
It's really good.
It's just really good.
And the thing is, like, I mean, yeah, not all of it is 100%. I remember there was one line specifically that I was like, that's so dumb, where Katniss takes a sip of soup and was like, it's salty like my tears or something.
Oh my
like,
god, I know. That was
so really there, bad. Like, there are a couple of lines that are like cheesy cringy. And yeah, cringy. Yeah. Yeah. And there are, you know, a couple of things like, why PETA team up with the Koreans? but like as a whole, really, really good.
Yeah. And just like succinct and like well plotted and just great characters and interesting world with like commentary on our own world and like very good. Yeah. Like no wonder it was such like a phenomenon. It was like right, it was like The Hunger Games was made because Harry Potter was made. But like that started a ricochet effect of like every YA movie was then made after The Hunger Games.
Yeah, no, like, I mean it had a huge, huge influence on the genre and on kind of like kickstarting, you know, YA speculative fiction like that.
Yeah.
Dystopian fiction.
And then like that's all is Suzanne Collins coming up with a prequel?
She just recently announced that she's planning on writing a prequel novel.
Okay, because I was about to be like, she did this, and then she, like, fucked right off. She was like,
I mean, she
okay,
did
done.
For, like, I don't know.
for a very long
10
time.
Years or something, yeah.
So I was, like, proud of her for that. But, like, now I don't
I
know.
Maybe she's coming back. Well, see. Maybe the prequel
maybe
will be
really
good.
Yeah, I don't know. But, I mean, I would read the fuck out of Haymitch's story.
Yeah.
So definitely. I don't know if that's what it is, but...
Thank you so much for listening to A Bit Much.
We would like to thank Bree Memba and Meredith Stein for our lovely logo.
You can find us on the internet. Our Twitter is @abitmuchpodcast. Our email is abitmuchpodcast@gmail.com. And our blog is abitmuchpodcast.blogspot.com.
I'm still impressed that Jenna can remember all that, but you can use the internet to tell us any books / movies you want to read / watch / drink / talk about.
So, thank you again so much for listening. My name is Jenna.
And I'm Megan.
And we'll talk to you next time. Until then, read responsibly.